Thank you. So that's pretty much the title of the program, right? So that's what I will try to talk about today. And of course, it's, as usual, something that has been done with a bunch of colleagues. So you see two of the organizers here, and also Florent, who is here. And the main author on the last part that I will be talking about is Stefano, who is also here, and a bunch of other colleagues. So what is this about? So kind of the question that we are asking, and that also many people in this audience are asking, is that which high-dimensional inference problems are solvable kind of close to optimally with tractable algorithms? So that's a very generic question. And which algorithms? And so that's what, you know, that's kind of what I want to talk about. But I will talk on a very concrete example. And I will make it really concrete so that really like everybody can imagine something very specific. So to introduce my example, I like to introduce it on this kind of a card game where I have like my audience. And then I deal a card, which in this case is plus or minus one to everybody. Okay, and you don't show me the card, and it's a kind of game between you and me. And what I observe, I need to observe something. So I, for each pair of you, I just ask, you know, can you draw a random number which is from a Gaussian with zero mean and variance delta, and then you add plus 1 over square root of n, where n is the number of people, if your cards are the same, so you have the right to see each other's card, and then you subtract 1 over square root of n if your cards are different. Okay, and then I observe this matrix Y for every pair, and my goal is from the matrix Y to group the people as well as I can into those that have one card and those that have another card, and there's this oval symmetry, so I will never be able to tell who is plus I, who is minus one, but I will be able to tell the two groups, hopefully. So that's kind of a problem.
For every pair, you're not just sampling pairs.
For every pair. In this, okay, that's a valid variant, but in this talk it will be every pair. And so how would one solve such a problem if one is like a student in some, I don't know, statistics, data science, whatever. So the first thing that comes to the mind is to use PCA, to simply take this matrix Y and look at its eigendecomposition. Because actually this matrix Y is a random matrix plus a rank 1 perturbation. Right? If the cards that you had, I call them xi, and xi is equal either to plus 1 or to minus 1, then I can write the matrix that I observe as the product of xi star, xj star, plus a random matrix c. So this is a low, this is a rank 1 matrix plus a random matrix, and from, you know, in this room we have the BBP comes back. Now we know what it is. So we know about the performance of this principal component analysis on this problem is that if that variance of the noise is bigger than 1, then the leading eigenvector of this matrix correlates with the ground truth, so it will split the group pretty well into the ground truth values of the cards. And if the noise is smaller than 1, then the correlation between the ground truth and the leading eigenvector is just 0. Did I say it the other way now? Sorry, but is it written? It's correct. So you're right. For large noise, it's hard, obviously, and for small noise, it's easy. Oof. But so somehow this nice. But this PCA doesn't give us the optimal error value in the sense that this color product for cars that were plus minus one is not as large as it could possibly do. So that's kind of not in my definition of optimal. This is not good enough. That one, yes. In that case. But in others, it will be not. But OK, so I kind of, I will be, OK, you will see. And so why did I jump so much? So we were here. So what we want to look at instead is the estimation or the procedure that actually is optimal in terms of the error, which in this case is the bias inference. What you need to write the posterior of what you don't know, given what you observe, which in this case is simply this term that takes into account the prior that the cards were plus minus one, and then the likelihood, which is just a translation of the fact that you are drawing a random Gaussian number of variance delta. And then the optimal estimator that either maximizes the number of correctly assigned cards or maximizes the mean square error relates to the marginals of this high-dimensional probability distribution. And I mean, you can maybe see, like, if you look at this as a Hamiltonian, that this is just the Sherrington-Kirkpatrick-Mal with this order that is a different ensemble than the usual one. We call it the planted disorder. Okay, so we will be looking at a slightly more generic case, which is not anymore the SKMAL, where the cards are actually not only plus minus one, but they are taken from some generic distribution Px. And that stays the same, this stays the same, just the prior here is different. So in, say, last 2-3 years, we learned pretty much, you know, a lot of things about this, about a model like that. So for instance, you know, somehow with the replica method, we knew how to solve that in principle 40 years ago, but, you know, people didn't look maybe at all the possible particular cases. But we, more recently, we actually also, you know, this would be the series of work. So for the plus minus one spins, this, the fact that the replica symmetric free entropy, which is stated here, what it is when we take this the normalization of the posterior, which is just the partition function in physics, we divide it by the system size, take the logarithm of that. The theorem says that it actually concentrates around the maximum of this function, which now is not high dimensional anymore. This x and v here is just a scalar variable. This one is taken from the prior distribution, and this one is just a scalar Gaussian with variance 1. And this function Carl z here is just an auxiliary function that that is defined as the normalization of a probability distribution that we get by making a product of a Gaussian by this prior. So that's just a special function that enters in, which is the tangent hyperbolic in the SK model. But in general, it's something else. So we know that rigorously. And we also know that the free energy, since it is a kind of a moment generating function, that it translates directly to the mean square error of this bias optimal estimator. And it's just given as a second moment of this probability distribution minus where this function is maximized. So the global maximum of this scalar function of one scalar parameter translates to the minimum mean square error. So that's the best one that one can achieve irrespectively of the computational complexity. All right, but irrespectively of the computational complexity is not something that we are happy with. That's maybe nice to know, but we want to know what algorithms are able to achieve. So we also, you know, so natural question is, can tractable algorithms achieve this error? And we also worked, you know, on that question, and that kind of to answer that question, one needs to know about an algorithm that is called approximate message passing, that for this particular problem was kind of derived or written in number of works. So here are some of them. It's kind of a generalization of the TAP equations that Mark was talking about this morning with the right time indices. And it is iterative algorithm that iterates the estimates of the marginals and their variances via these special functions f that are related to the Carl z. Is just not the normalization, but this time the expectation of this same probability distribution, so just some particular function. Well, maybe this one is the tangent hyperbolic, not the previous one. Yeah, that's actually right. For the SK model. And then these parameters that enter, they update in this way. This would be the Onsager term. You see here this kind of two-time evolution that also Mark was talking about. So what's really particular about this approximate message passing among all the other algorithms that you could apply for high-dimensional inference or optimization is that we really know nicely how to analyze this algorithm, what it actually does at a given time iteration was the correlation of its estimator with the ground truth. And that's called the state evolution. And one way to say what the state evolution of this algorithm is doing is to say, I already said that the minimum error is given by the global maximum of this free entropy function. And what the algorithm is achieving is given by the local maximum of that same function that is reached when we start at M0. Okay, so the same function describes the optimal performance, but also performance of this algorithm. But if this function has more than one maxima, then they may not be the same. And that's kind of, and this function is very simple, right? It's a scalar, it's a function of one parameter, so evaluating it is very simple. So just to give you an example of what we get from such analysis, so here I'm in the case of this card game, right? The cards are plus minus one, but I also add zeros. So actually fraction one minus row of people get card 0, but otherwise the gain is the same. I still measure the product plus noise. And these four figures are fixed points of that state evolution, or the maximizers of the, or extremizers of this free entropy function, for different values of this fraction of people that actually got non-zero. Okay, so here if I went to everybody having plus minus one, I would have like a single curve, meaning that there is always a single maximum. That would be the case when there are non-zeros at all. In that case, this approximate message passing is asymptotically optimal for all values of the noise. This is the average overlap, so one minus the error. And the light blue curves, here is this, the performance of the PCA. So here we also see somehow the gap, like how much suboptimal is the PCA in terms of the overlap. And this answers, you see that they go to zero at the same point. So the transition is always one. It's actually, in this case, is the delta over rho square needs to be one. It is the variance of the log. But then as this number of non-zeros is getting smaller and smaller, the curve gets this kind of a wave in it. And so I will focus on this one. You know, how does this, that we have like several fixed points and the blue ones are stable, this one is unstable, how is that interpreted algorithmically? That actually leads to what we call the hard phase, which is nothing else than saying that there is simply a phase in the noise parameter where this approximate message passing is not reaching the optimal performance. And that's kind of the phase between, in physics sense, is the spinodal region of this first-order phase transition. When we have a bifurcation like that, that leads to a first-order phase transition, and this region between, you know, the lower curve and the upper curve, that's a phase where the algorithm just doesn't match what would, you know, exponentially long algorithm.
Even if you give it a very, very long time.
This particular algorithm just converges to a fixed point, so it just doesn't match it. Yeah. Okay. Like for instance, Monte Carlo would in exponential time, of course, always match the optimal one. But we are interested in linear time here, constant time. Okay. So there is this hard phase, and you could say, okay, this is just this algorithm that is kind of not so good. Okay, what's special about it? But somehow what's interesting about this is that this hard phase seems to be kind of very fundamental in the sense that this very algorithmic threshold is shared, as I said already, by the spectral algorithms, but also by the semi-definite programmings, which is kind of a powerful class in the computer science complexity theory of algorithms, and they are not better either. So kind of that leads, and it also appears in many, many problems. So this would be kind of all related to what I'm talking about here. This would be sparse versions of that SK model, if you want. This would be, say, perceptron-related models. And in all these models where we see this hard phase related to a first-order phase transition, is this conjecture that actually the approximate message passing achieves the lowest error among all polynomial algorithms. And you know, it's kind of bold to say something like that. So, but it looks plausible. And there are some, you know, here I picked one work. There are maybe a couple of more where there are some like steps towards showing why something like that could be true. That within some relatively large class of algorithms, this is true. So, what about this hard phase? So let's study it a bit. This is jumping too much. Oh, okay, that's definitely not what I wanted. So let's, you know, so now we kind of transition into the somehow last year work about this kind of understanding where this hard phase comes from and how it behaves physically, etc. So here I want to answer really the kind of a question, like what are really the properties of the Gibbs measure in this hard phase and around? But I need somehow, the Gibbs measure is the equilibrium, so I need to condition not to be close to the ground truth. If I condition not to be close to the ground truth, like how does the landscape really look like? So that's a very natural question, but somehow looking at it carefully hasn't been, how is this jumping? I don't like that. Hasn't been done, you know, before. We did it only last year with Fabrizio, Silvio Franz, and Pier Francesco Urbani. And what we did in particular, we analyzed the one-step replica symmetry breaking. So I will not explain what it is. Mark already did it in his talk, and you know, you can ask me offline if you don't know. And we computed the one RSB complexity in this very same in this model I'm talking about. And what we found out is that, kind of unexpectedly, the hard face is glassy, meaning that there are many spurious local minima that can potentially block the dynamics. But what we were kind of at first surprised by is that this glassiness extends even below the algorithm threshold. So even in the phase where the approximate message passing works just fine, these glassy states are still there. So that was kind of, okay, well, I will get back to it. But kind of one thing that I want to make a point about is that Mark told us about the survey propagation this morning, which kind of in three points, the story of the survey propagation, which kind of transformed a little bit this field of like applying statistical physics to optimization and inference, is that once people realized that in KSAT there is a glassy region, they took that into account in the algorithm, and then the algorithm actually managed to find solutions for this KSAT problem even in regions where no other algorithms were working, and it's still the state of the art on random instances of KSAT today after like 16 years, so that's pretty remarkable, like in computer science. So our idea simply was, if the hard phase is glassy, can we take into account that replica symmetry breaking and improve the approximate message passing algorithm and enter into the hard phase? So physically, that sounds very natural, especially after the success of the survey propagation. So that's what we did. And here, so in a sense, we designed approximate survey propagation. So it's a version of the approximate message passing that takes into account the replica symmetry breaking. And here we plot the error as a function of the Parisi parameter of this replica symmetry breaking. So when it is 1, we are back at the approximate message passing. In other ways, we are kind of scanning the glassy states. And kind of remarkably, physically, we found that the error is always minimized at 1. So we just found it analytically. We don't understand it physically. So what it means is that the approximate survey propagation is never better than the bias optimal message passing. So taking into account the glassiness that is there actually doesn't help. And to me, this is still mystery from the physics point of view. But mathematically, after somehow looking at the structure of these equations and discussing with Andrea, we realized that this was kind of included already in some of the works he did on kind of a general class of approximate message passing algorithms. Because this algorithm just still is in that class. So mathematically, we somehow know that it cannot improve. There is a question.
You guys have written papers saying Bayes optimal AMP is on the Shimori line, so there shouldn't be replica symmetry breaking. How is that consistent with the coexistence of glassiness?
Right, that's a very good question. So the equilibrium is on the Nishimori line, right? But when I'm talking about the hard phase, we are out of the equilibrium because it's precisely defined as not reaching the equilibrium. So that's this. When I said that I conditioned the Gibbs measure to be far away from the ground truth, I actually condition it to be far from equilibrium. And out of equilibrium, there are no Nishimori conditions. So there is a glassiness. But thank you. That's a very good, actually. I should put a slide with that on you. Yes. So that's the first result in that paper. And the second result that I already mentioned is that this glassiness or residual glassiness actually extends below the algorithmic threshold of the AMP. And this we clearly see in the calculation. And physically, this strongly indicates, but though indirectly, that if we think of physical dynamics such as Langevin dynamics or Gibbs sampling or Monte Carlos, then those should actually get into trouble. And so then our goal was to confirm that. So how can one confirm something like that? So one can try numerically, and I actually, those of you who were in Karsh's, so a nice talk by Federico Ricci-Tersenghi, who has some work in progress onto the numerics on confirming that. So we can. He will talk about something else, but he will be happy to tell you about this offline, right? And what we tried is to confirm that analytically. But how does that go? That means to analyze something like gradient descent or Langevin dynamics or Monte Carlo analytically. But that's much harder than the message passing. Like, we precisely love the message passing because it's so easy to analyze what it actually dynamically does. There is no memory and it's like a trivial equation. But let's try anyway. So fortunately, we know from our physics colleagues that there is a small in the Spinglass literature where the Langevin dynamics can be described with a kind of state evolution, which is the spherical P-Spinglass. So basically here we hunted for a model that will satisfy the following ingredients. So first of all, it will be a kind of spherical P-Spinglass so that we can solve the Langevin dynamics with this kind of Crisanti, Horner, Somers, Kulian, Dolokurchan, and others equations. And Leticia will, I think, tell us about them on Thursday. But at the same time, we want it to be an inference problem where the hard phase for the AMP will exist, because that's kind of our point. And at the same time, we wanted it to be a model where the hard, where the approximate, which is in the class, so that the approximate message passing is conjectured to be optimal. So we needed this algorithmic threshold to be of the same order of the noise as this information, as where the first order of transition actually is. That kind of excludes one of the models that like could fit these first two ingredients, but otherwise, but we didn't want that. So not the spike tensor model. So what we did is the following. So we picked this mixed spiked matrix tensor model, and that's like a horrible name, and the definition is kind of abstract. But let's go back to this game with cards that we were playing. So all I'm saying in this model is that ideal cards, which this time are such that the sum of squares of these cards is n. Okay, so they are spherical cards if you want. Okay, and then I'm asking every, I'm asking, so I'm asking every pair, I'm still asking the same thing as before, the product plus a big noise, but I'm also asking every triple or p uple. Okay. And I collect this matrix and the P or the P tensor. Okay, so that's the model. So it's not a completely crazy model. Some people in literature on topic modeling were using something like that for the, you know, doing, you know, it exists in the literature. Okay. So from the point of view of physics, it's indeed you know, this would be the Hamiltonian, so it's a kind of a spiked or planted version of the mixed 2 plus P spherical spinglass model. So that's kind of what we wanted. So for this model, what we can do is, first of all, what we did before. So analyze the approximate message passing, analyze the bias optimal performance. So this is the phase diagram. This is the noise in the tensor, and this is 1 over the noise in the matrix. So the pure spike tensor model is this axis here. So if the noise is too big, it's impossible. And then there is the hard phase. But you see the hard phase extends here up to 0. So that's kind of one would have to scale the noise with n to actually get it back easy. So that's kind of why we don't like that pure spiked model. And then the pure matrix model would kind of be plus infinity here. But you see that it converges pretty fast. So this is the BBP phase transition, right? That's not, that's just one. And then for the AMP, all this region is easy, and this is impossible, and this is hard in the sense that here the IMP is not reaching the optimal performance. So this looks kind of okay, why not, but kind of boring. But let's know.
Why do you have 2 lines here, the red and this dotted?
Oh yeah, so this is the red is the first order phase transition. And it has 2 spin orders, like when I lose one of the fixed point, when I lose the other one. This is the algorithmic threshold, so that's the important one. This is the other one, which kind of doesn't have an interesting algorithmic implication. So I just plotted there, but it's not very interesting. So now, finally, about the Langevin algorithm. So this is the Langevin algorithm that we consider here. So this is the gradient of that Hamiltonian plus the Langevin noise. Here we are, in a sense, at temperature 1, so this is the correlation of the noise, and this term is just taking into account the spherical constraint. So this parameter mu of t is dynamically changed so that the configuration is always on the sphere. So we are fixing that. So we know that such an algorithm at large time, but possibly exponentially, samples the posterior, the bias optimal posterior. Okay, so that's good. But what we are interested in, where does it go in large constant time? And this is one case that we actually can analyze. So these are these Crisanti, Horner, Somers, Kulian, Dolokurchan equations that hopefully Leticia will explain. But here I'm just like throwing them at you. So these are equations. So again, what we are gaining here is that this was a high-dimensional problem, and we are reducing the description of the behavior of the algorithm into something that doesn't. Oh, here I actually copied the independent definition, but here you see there is no n anymore because the functions that appear here are just the large n limit of these functions. So we reduced it to equations where the size of the system doesn't appear anymore. The only thing that appears there is the correlation with the ground truth, which is this C bar, is the correlation at time between time t and time something else, and is the response function here. So for the normal p-spin model, one has these two equations, and here, since it is the spiked version, we just have one more equation which describes the correlation with the spike. But otherwise, kind of these are, you know, these equations have the standard form. And just a comment that without spike, Leticia will talk about them, Federico also on Thursday, without spike, they were even proven that these actually do describe the behavior of the Langevin algorithm by also two of the authors are in the audience. The proof with spike, we honestly did not even try, but maybe in this workshop we can work on it. So how does it behave? So what do we get? So this is the first phase diagram, where I'm plotting the correlation with the ground truth that we are getting as a function of time. So the main plot is the Langevin, but I will first like show you the one of approximate message passing, which looks pretty much boring. First of all, the number of iterations in which the approximate message passing is converging is just tiny, so around 20, 30. And as I am decreasing the noise, so as information theoretically, the problem must get easier, I see that the correlation is growing. So that's meaning that, you know, that's intuitive. And the convergence time basically doesn't depend on the value of the noise. Okay, why not? But for the Langevin, it looks very different. So,
this AMP here is not the Boolean Gaussian equation.
No, the AMP, that's just the state evolution of the approximate message passing.
There's
n in this one. No, there is no n there. That's the state evolution.
That's a different algorithm.
I'm just like, this behaves kind of intuitively, right? As the noise gets smaller, the performance gets better, and it's faster to get better. Okay, so that's what I want to contrast. For the Langevin, it's different. As the noise gets smaller, the plateau gets better, as it must, because it's reaching the equilibrium, which is the posterior, which must be the optimum. But it takes longer and longer. And this is in a log scale. This was not even in the log scale. Like, so here, if you cannot read it, this is 10 to the 6 times 10 to the 6. This is 10 to the 2. So it gets really abruptly longer.
I don't have that for the last curves. I don't see the plateau.
Yeah, there is not the plateau because, this curve was obtained with the numerical solution of these integral differential equations, where we are kind of logarithmically increasing the time step. And when it jumps, it gets kind of unstable. So we just didn't put it to be somehow honest that something, you know, fishy happens in our numerical solution.
So you should dream of a plateau.
You should dream, hopefully, yeah. But kind of, the checks that we did is the where it jumps, it's kind of consistent. It doesn't depend on things. But then there is something, you know, something numerically stability. Okay, so that's, I wanted to put this under the carpet, but okay.
One can evaluate the long time limit of the equation.
Or not. Okay, I mean, I guess between the authors we don't completely agree, but we can discuss that as well. Yes, Amir.
It's possible that the time that you take there is so large that it's effectively for the size of the system that you're using, it's just exponential.
This is infinite size. This is the state evolution. So the size is infinite already here. So this is not exponential, this is constant.
Equation.
Yeah, I plot.
Solve the
so we are solving numerically the equations that are already written in the limit. So we are not. That's somehow an open problem, I think. What actually is the asymptotic solution in this case? This already is kind of a numerics where we are making the time step longer and longer as we go. Yeah, possibly there are other ways to do it in a smarter way. I don't know. I mean, 10 to the, I mean, my point is that 10 to the 6 is compared to 30 so big that it doesn't really matter to go to 10 to the 10, okay? I don't really care. It's just unpractical.
Can you assume that there is a platform calculate the platform from the equations from the asymptotic?
So, yes and no.
That was my point.
That was Chiara's point. Okay. So Chiara says yes. Okay. We can discuss it. Because, yeah, okay. So, right, but the, we know where the plateau will be because it goes to equilibrium, and the equilibrium that's the same. By the way, the plateaus of the Langevin, they are exactly the same as the IMP. That's the same correlation that samples the measure.
We know that it goes to equilibrium.
Okay, yes, mathematically we don't know that. Okay, mathematically we don't know that. From the numerical solution, when we get the plateau, like, 7 digits are the same. So, okay. So,
where you get it.
That's an important check. That's an important check. I agree. Mathematically, we don't know it. I agree. But from the numerics, we see this absolutely clearly.
In finite
time, you don't get to the spike. Okay. The spike tensor is particular from this point of view. That's kind of why we, you know, the scaling is different there. So, we cannot do this kind of comparison in the spike. So that's kind of what we wanted to do in the first place. Okay, so we get, but this is something funny, like the fact that we are decreasing the noise and it takes longer to get easier. We are decreasing the noise, right? Kind of how was the plateau and does it diverge or not is kind of a second order question. What is important here is that they cross. That's like from the optimization point of view, the strange thing. So then, you know, and again, this is a plot about which one can complain because we just take the where the jump is, so where we reach like half of the plateau, and then extrapolate the time with a power law. And of course, okay, we can like do different power laws and extrapolate to pretty much everything, but if we somehow do it in a naive way, you know, this is equilibration time plotted as this noise parameter. So it's just clearly consistent with the divergence at some point. Okay, but if I wanted to really prove that it diverges, then I don't know. So we are kind of on the side that, you know, if it takes more than 10 to the 6 or maybe even 10 to the 3, it's so impractical that we just declare it that it doesn't work. Okay, irrespectively whether it actually diverges or not. That's a different question. Using this procedure of basically extrapolating, and you see that kind of the last points we are getting numerically are kind of close to the point where we are extrapolating. So, you know, this is, you know, okay, this is what it is. So if now we plot all this in the phase diagram, so this would be this green line, what this is telling us actually that in good part of the region where the approximate message passing was working with our problem, the Langevin actually is not working. It's taking completely impractical time and maybe infinite time. And that would be the region between this below this green line. So the Langevin hard phase is larger than the approximate message passing hard phase. So that's kind of what this complexity analysis suggested indirectly. And here it's kind of quantified analyzing the Langevin algorithm. And, you know, two comments. So what I said is that the Langevin, and so why does the Langevin fails? Well, the explanation was in that indirect evidence because there is glassiness. So Langevin fails because of this residual glassiness. It gets stuck. And it's not so surprising from a physical point of view. If it is glassy, Langevin gets stuck. Okay, now nothing particular. Nobody in the physics part of the audience should be surprised about that. So for the physics part of the audience, what is surprising actually is that the approximate message passing that ignores the glassiness, and the glassiness is there, it optimizes the objective that is physically wrong and yet performs better in terms of the inference. So that's kind of a physics. How is that physically possible? We don't know, but we clearly see that that's the case.
What does it mean, optimizes physically wrong objective?
Like, if you think of it like optimizing the tap free energy, it's you know, it should be the replica, you know, it should be taking the replica symmetry breaking into account, and it doesn't.
Well, that's not clear because at equilibrium, the replica symmetric tap free energy is correct.
Okay,
and it's always correct. States, even if there is
Okay. This is not a mathematically precise sentence. So yeah, this is just kind of interpreting things. One can complain about this formulation. I agree. This formulation is not very. But you know, it just does something wrong. It just.
It's not completely clear that it fails because of residual gases.
For the Langevin?
Yes.
Yes, it is. That kind of when you know. Okay, I didn't talk about that line in the figure, but that line that kind of is not equal to this one, but has a quantitatively the same behavior. That's actually when we, in this model, analyze when the one-step replica symmetry breaking stable states.
It's not good.
Okay. When the glassy states are there. So stable 1RSB states are there below the blue line. Okay. Maybe other states are there above the blue line. This we didn't analyze the full RSB in this model, etc. But that kind of looks related. So. Okay, but again, okay, maybe not. We can discuss about that. So, just the second point. So the second point is also something that is very puzzling to us. It's last point of the talk. Is if we ask, can the Langevin match the approximate message passing by tricking it somehow? And in this case, it actually can. If we somehow dig into the structure of the model, we realize that So a natural way to overcome barriers is to do annealing. Okay, if we do naive annealing in this model, it doesn't work. But the following annealing does work. We actually can fix the noise or the temperature related to the matrix and anneal only in the temperature related to the tensor. So we kind of split the Hamiltonian in two and kind of switch off the tensor at the beginning. And then we are turning it gradually on. And this actually helps. This actually makes the Langevin work as well as the approximate message passing. So we can write the Langevin state evolution for that case as well. This is changing the equation slightly, but not much, because the temperature depends on time this time. But OK, that's not such a big deal. And here is a curve. Here is a plot that kind of I will not walk through details. But it is in a case where if we don't do that, the correlation stays at zero. And if we do this annealing, the correlation goes nicely to the optimal value. So physically, why not? Right, switching off the tensor takes the glassiness away, in a sense. So that makes the algorithm work. But this is very puzzling from the Bayesian inference point of view. Because what that means, I mean, what is Bayesian inference about? Is about matching the right prior and the right model of how the data were generating. And then if we manage to do that, then it works well. And here, basically, we are showing that computationally, it might be advantageous to actually mismatch the prior. So we actually, on the way, as we are running the Langevin, are purposefully using the wrong noise, and that is actually helping the algorithm. So that's something that cannot happen to the AMP. And again, in some works of Andrea, this can be mathematically proven. This clearly cannot be helping any procedure that is provably reaching the optimal. This cannot be true for the optimal solution, but it is true for the Langevin. So I'm very puzzled by that, and I just wonder if anybody saw something like that before, that actually it's better, like in a setting where we know exactly how the data were generated, that it's better to mismatch the prior computationally. Okay, so that's one point we are very puzzled about. And with this, I will go to my summary, which is to say, in this model of inference, we have state evolution for the Langevin. So that is kind of based on equations that are very standard in physics. But as far as we know, they were always used in the optimization setting, never in the inference setting. So this is we just generalize them in a pretty straightforward way, but with new results and puzzles and marvels and pitfalls to the inference case. We have this conclusion that AMP is superior by making physically wrong assumptions of replica symmetry that is not there, but okay, maybe. Okay. And this Bayesian puzzle that for the Langevin, it may be that using a wrong prior brings computational advantage. Okay. And there are a couple of other things that we studied that you can see in the poster of Stefano that is now posted before the between the dining hall and the corridor. So we looked also at gradient descent and catch rise complexity and the performance of the approximate message passing at zero temperature. This is kind of my summary of what we did. And just one last thing to say, that this is for this mixed matrix p-spin model, but we kind of presume or expect that the same phenomenology will be true in all the other models where the hard phase due to this first order phase transition appears. So notably in those that are related to neural networks such as perceptron and committee machines, etc. And we are looking at those currently. And this is just a list of papers where this appeared. So these blue ones, that's actually the ones, the gray ones are kind of the introductory part about the low rank matrix and tensor estimation, the proofs of about the approximate message pass, no, that's not, and the proofs of the replica formula, and these are kind of the works on the glassiness of the hard phase and the Langevin algorithm. I'm probably a bit late, thank you.
Questions?
Yes, no, just to understand, because indeed, I at the beginning, I thought that AMP, I didn't understand why AMP could be right, thinking that was physically wrong. And just to say why I thought it was physically wrong, in the sense that if you want to interpret the AMP dynamics as a true dynamics, then you know that actually you can write down exact equation for the true dynamics of the magnetization in a given sample, where magnetization is average over thermal noise. These are the dynamical tap equation. And then if you are very...
These are exact equation for the magnetization when you run Langevin dynamics.
Exactly. And then, but in this equation are much more complicated than AMP, and you could say, okay, if I'm very roughly, I approximate them, then I get AMP, at least the structure. And so from this point of view, it looks weird that if you do the real dynamics, which is the Langevin, which correspond to dynamical tap equation or the equation on CNR, you get stuck. And then you approximate the equation to get some kind of dynamical equation, and then you don't get stuck. Of course, it's not the good way to think about, but I think if you try to think it to AMP, I guess the physical dynamics, this is where, at least for me, the puzzle come from. I don't understand why it's so good.
To me, it was also a surprise, because in some of the previous works, we just ran numerics not so carefully as Federico did, and it always kind of seemed to fit the Monte Carlo performance and the AMP, but it actually doesn't. So found that interesting.
Okay. Yeah, I think it's a bit misleading to think of it as descent dynamics in a landscape.
Okay.
But I had another question. You had this issue with annealing, and you said
yes,
that if you annealed, but isn't a simple example to say, okay, in your model, if I throw away all the tensor information, I just use the matrix information, then as soon as you are in the phase above one, you just do PCA and you get a positive correlation.
Yes, you get a positive correlation, and then turning it on gets you the optimal correlation. That's precisely the point, right?
Okay. So that is something that actually I think this kind of strategy, many people in high dimensional statistics and machine learning have started. First, construct a very simple spectral method, solve the spectral approximation algorithm for your problem, do the spectral algorithm, and then this brings you in a neighborhood of the global optimum, and then just show that in the neighborhood of the global optimum, the function is strongly convex. For instance, Yuxin Chen, who is somewhere, has done several papers.
This is okay. This is true, but to me, this strategy feels like a cheating in the sense that it really assumes, that it really, in a crucial way, uses the structure of the model, right? That if you didn't know that that what you observe comes from this mixed model, this is your data, this is your, how would you know that you should do the spectrum on the Y and not on some unfolding on the T? Which spectral method should you do? So, okay, this one works, but because it kind of, uses already our understanding of the. So it's for me, it's not like a generic strategy to make it work.
But this
it's
is also for your strategy. Annealing. Also for your annealing.
Exactly. My annealing is a cheated strategy to make it work. That's all I'm saying. Like, it's one strategy, but it's what we kind of are thinking about. Can we have a strategy to make the Langevin works that is actually not using such a cheat? That is just over-parameterizing and suddenly it works. That is using stochasticity, stochastic gradient descent, and suddenly it works. I would like to see something like that. But that's in progress.
I guess we're speaking of cheating a little
bit. Oh. But he speaks loud, it's okay.
Oh, sorry. I mean, this isn't quite on topic, but if I look at, instead of the more spin glossy like landscapes, I look more like a random field isomorph.
Okay.
Which is actually slower as far as launch than
it's quite slow.
More. But you know, we know from other things that there are some it's related to many cup problems, and so it can actually be done in a longer time by going completely out of the space of which
yes.
the original problem. But are there ways of somehow seeing some structure which is associated with some bigger problem that's there that might be able to go faster? I mean, you're about going away from the sphere and...
Yeah, that's...
Are there sort of ways of finding hints of some structure there without going ahead of time?
Yeah, that's a good question, but somehow in this work, I somehow wanted to disentangle the questions that relate to optimization, as would be the random field isomorph, and that relate to inference where there is some ground truth that you're looking for,
yeah.
right? Because in this inference cases, we have this, from like theoretical computer science point of view, this conjecture about the hard phase that is kind of very, that seems quite solid and possible. See, we don't have anything like that for the optimization. I mean, we don't really have a good conjecture of, you know, we know there are hard optimization problems, but we don't have a good conjecture of what's the optimal optimization algorithm in those cases. Yeah, I mean, different go to different energy, and there is no, I mean, at least within this class of like spin glass like looking or Ising-Mal like looking models, no like conjecture or solid theory that I'm aware of, like what is actually the optimal.
You mean the optimal that it can be done by polynomial time?
Yes, that can be done, that can be reached efficiently. So we have good ideas about those that where the optimum cannot be reached in polynomial time, but we don't have a precise conjecture like where do you go. Okay, whereas here, kind of this conjecture of what is the algorithmic threshold is very solid. I mean, this kind of evidence that the spectral algorithms and the semi-definite programming algorithms really all like stop at that very same point. And in some of these problems, like the like planted clique problem would be one of the examples, or like this community detection in stochastic block model, like people in the computer science and statistics world really try like hundreds of algorithms, and this seems to be like a barrier that is there. So we kind of concentrated on this one, on the inference. But so in the optimization is of course also an interesting question, but a different one.
I take only one question if anybody has a very quick one, because otherwise, or reasonably quick.
Oh, come
average
on.
Quick.
I have a very quick one.
Yes.
Do you run any of the two algorithms on a finite size problem?
So the approximate message passing, yes. The Langevin, no, because there is this trouble with the hard phase that it actually has a very strong finite size corrections in the wrong sense, that it appears easier. So it's kind of very tricky to confirm something. You know, that's why we need the sparse models. That's what you were doing. You know, I will wait for your results, because in the dense models where things are quadratic, so I'm gonna go to such a big size. I don't really think this is a strategy that will lead somewhere to do it numerically.
Okay.
But maybe I'm wrong.
This we have to understand whether okay, we continue.
Okay.